this is Allison Sheridan of the NoSillaCast podcast, hosted at podfeet.com, a technology geek podcast with an ever-so-slight Macintosh bias, a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. Today is Sunday, May 7th, 2006, and this is show number 42. Well, how y'all doing today? I don't know how long the show is going to be, because I'm actually writing up my notes on a plane back from Virginia today. I had a quick three-day trip out there to visit my dear friends, Harvey and Melissa, and it was just absolutely beautiful. I had this vision that I would write my notes during the week before I went on my trip, but work became insane for some reason, so I didn't get much done. Then I had this vision that I would write them on the plane on the way out to Virginia, but I slept the whole way instead. Then I had this vision that we would just lay around their country estate and I would take advantage of their high-speed satellite broadband, but instead we ran all over the place. I had an absolutely fabulous time. Virginia is so green compared to California. Evidently, I hit an absolutely perfect day. On Saturday morning, I went out for a run. It was about 70 degrees. The light was filtering through the trees, and there was a mist coming off of the pond with wild geese on it. And then we went out and ran all over the place, and everywhere we went, it was just gorgeous. I took about 60 pictures, I think. It was so beautiful. We had a wonderful breakfast at a country inn that used to be a train station, and then we went wine tasting up in the Blue Ridge Mountains. We saw views like you can't imagine. I threw a couple of pictures in the show notes if you want to see what I mean. We didn't get back from the wine tasting till about 8 o'clock at night, so then Melissa served us a fabulous dinner on her new inlaid dining room table that I wasn't allowed to touch. She said I might hurt it. I'm a sucker for inlaid wood, though. I really liked it. After dinner, Harvey crashed. He did all the driving, and Melissa and I played with her computer. You know how when you go to someone's house and they have a stack of stuff that you want them to do for you on there, and it sounds fun to you, but then for some reason, something goes wrong with every single thing you try to do and you end up mired in this huge mess and you're just miserable? Well, this was the exact opposite experience. That usually happens to me. But we just everything worked perfectly. Melissa wanted a good photo organizing, light editing program. And so I downloaded the free Picasa software from Google at picasa.com. I did a full review of this a while ago, so I won't go into too much detail. But this software is fantastic. It downloaded and installed easily, and I asked it to find all the pictures on her disk. It gathered them all in and organized them in folders by date. We then were able to pull in about 2,000 photos from a CD backup she had, and that took quite a while, but the cool thing was that if a picture was already on her disk, it would mark that one, the one on the CD, with a big red X and not duplicate it. I thought that was a pretty cool feature. Picasa will also give her some editing tools, like setting better fill lighting, color correction, and red eye reduction, as well as a nice photo straightening tool. Kind of like what you can do in iPhoto. It has it puts a grid on the photo, and then you just push on the photo to rotate it a little bit. Oh, I should mention that this is a Windows-only tool, and I gotta say I found myself envying her for getting to use it. Maybe I'll put it on my Windows partition of my Mac. Anyway, it's a really nice, intuitive interface, very easy to learn. Everything we played with did just what we suspected it would do. Pushed a button and it would do what we thought. One feature that's pretty cool if you're just starting out taking photos is the backup option. You can tell it to back up any pictures you haven't previously backed up with Picasa. This won't be too helpful for Melissa since it did not recognize her 2,000 photos as having been from a Picasa backup, so it wanted to back them all up again. Instead, we went to the option to make a gift CD, which will burn photos to the CD and include a photo slideshow on the disk. Pretty neat stuff. Then, of course, I had to install iTunes for her and get her subscribed to the NoSillaCast, right? Strangely, this wasn't actually on her to-do list for me, but I knew she really wanted it. For some reason, the iTunes installation went flawlessly, which is not always the case on Windows, so I was pretty happy about that. She had a brand new printer copier scanner from HP, and it wasn't working to scan or print when I got there. We shoved in the installer CD, uninstalled the software, rebooted, and reinstalled, and it worked great. When does that ever happen? Never. Turned out she can run the scanner from within Picasa now, which makes a nice single interface for her. Not sure why it was boogered up in the first place, And there was a scary moment when we were unable to get the picture CD out, and I tried to use a paperclip on it like you do on a Mac, and it made some really frightening noises. But we just kind of shut it down, and then we rebooted, and it agreed to give us the CD back again. When in doubt, reboot, right? Anyway, it was a great trip. It was short, but I'm pretty sure they would have been sick of me if I'd stayed a moment longer, so they did look pretty exhausted by the time I left. Last week, I told you about the Tech Podcast Roundtable I was had a feature on, where I showed how to run Windows on the Mac running Parallels. I decided to make that video available to everyone on podfeet.com, so I made it a post on the site, just like my show notes. So you'll have to go to the website to pick it up. It's not in the feed. I debated back and forth whether I should make it part of the regular feed. It was 42 megabytes, so it's a lot bigger than any of my audio casts. They tend to run at a maximum of about 15 or 17 meg. So I thought it might kind of annoy some of you to suddenly have this massive file coming in on you. I also thought it might be confusing when you listened. I'm not sure about on all the players, but at least on the iPod, it puts an audio-only version of the video cast on the podcast side, and then you have to flip over to video podcasts to see the actual video. I don't know if that makes a lot of sense to you, but there's two ways to get to podcasts, one through video and one through the music side. So I'm not sure it would work as an audio-only file either, but I ended up figuring the best way would be to just post it on the site and then let you download it manually if you wanted to. Let me know if you think you'd rather have videos crop up once in a while in the feed, or if you're glad I isolate you from them so it's more of your choice. I've done a couple of tutorials that I'd like to make as videos, so I'd really like some feedback to help guide the show. This show is really all about you. You know, the thing I really do believe in with podcasting is that your view of it is what's the most important thing. It's not what I want to say, but what you want to hear. How do you want to hear it? When do you want to hear it? Because that's what makes the show great. For a while, at least here, I'll try to keep a link to I'll have a link to the video over on the sidebar under tutorials. So if you don't see the video come up right away, look over on the right-hand side and there's a link to it there. I got a little bit worried when Todd Cochran, who runs the Tech Podcast Roundtable, told us that last month he had about 25,000 downloads of it in the previous month. I have a pretty low bandwidth plan with VisiWeb. I'm cheap. So I had this imagining that suddenly I would get with this huge bill if I got that number of visitors to my site because they saw this or you know, even half of that. So I moved the enclosures for the audio or if there's ever video over to a company's service called Libsyn at libsyn.com. That's Libsyn. They have a cool business model designed just for podcasters. Instead of giving you tons of storage space and just a little bit of bandwidth, they give you a limit on how much new data you can upload per month, but allow you infinite bandwidth. Infinite, not big, infinite. And that's what a podcaster really needs, because we don't know how big we're going to get. The way they make this work financially is that they limit you on your new monthly content. So in this case, I'm limited to 100 megabytes per month of new stuff, which is plenty for me right now. With podcasts that run around 15 meg, that isn't too bad. They put that new content on high-speed servers that are highly accessible because that's the content that will be asked for the most during that month. Then they move the older content off to slower servers with slower data transfer rates, because the requirements for it will be less as time goes by. So hopefully that's going to work. What I think is an absolute miracle is that I did not botch up the feed when I did this. I had to do some changes to the feed, and I was sure I would booger it up and make it be up really late that night panicking while I fixed it. By some cyber miracle, I don't think I messed it up at all. In fact, I suspect that if I hadn't told you, you probably wouldn't even have known. Let me know if you did have trouble with the feed. Drop me a note at allison@podfeet.com if you did notice it. The feed itself didn't move. It's going to stay over at podfeet.com, but the reference to the enclosure files is all over on Libsyn. Another good thing about Libsyn is they have really cool statistics. They have little graphs showing daily downloads, pie charts for what kind of podcatcher people are using, and the ability to compare month to month. I love statistics, so that makes it really fun for me. Speaking of statistics, I've been trying to get PodTrack at podtrack.com That's PODTRAC, to gather statistics for me too. I had to put a tracking string at the beginning of every enclosure URL, the links to the actual audio files, and they said if I did that, it would take a couple of days for the stats to start to roll in. I wrote to them after a week because there wasn't anything there yet, and they politely told me it would take 10 days. I did suggest that saying 2 days on the website and knowing it really takes 10 might set incorrect expectations and perhaps they should change it. But after 2 weeks, it's still not up there. I'm not getting any kind of data at all, so I'm not sure if I did something wrong, but I checked with some other podcasters and they all said it took forever to get up. Anyway, fun to do. PodTrac's actual big purpose is to connect podcasters with advertisers. The idea is that they pull download statistics on the cast, which would tell the advertiser how much content you have, you know, how many downloads, how big is your customer base. And then the podcaster sets up a PodTrac survey on their site so demographics can be collected to see who the audience is. Then PodTrac tries to match up advertisers that would be appropriate. I sure wouldn't mind having some of the costs of creating the podcast delayed, but I really do not want to spam you guys. I've been thinking about what kind of advertisers I'd like, and I think geek stores would be cool, like CompUSA if they got some cool thing they're selling that week, something that changes. You know, some of the ads on the podcast are just driving me nuts. If I hear one more GoDaddy ad, I'm going to scream. You know, how many times do you actually need to buy a domain name in a year? It's not like 100 times a year, right? Anyway, I'm not sure how this is going to work out, but I'm just kind of poking at the waters to see what's going on. So I don't want to mess this podcast up. I think it's going pretty well. Sure wouldn't hurt to get some money, but that's not what I do it for. I might just end up using PodTrac for statistics gathering. Who knows? That is, if they ever gather any statistics. Listener Roland has been giving me some behind-the-scenes advice after I described my kernel panic with the Samsung microphone. Roland and his wife have a whole slew of Macs, and they use the Samsung plugged into an M-Audio USB Uno MIDI interface to record their daughters playing piano. I think this is an awesome use of technology. Whether they end up being famous concert pianists and use this as a way to critically analyze their playing, or whether they just keep those recordings to remember their childhood skills, I think it's really neat. Roland's wife is also interested in doing a podcast of her own sometime soon, and is trying to settle on the topic. My advice to her is to pick something about which she is passionate. That seems to be the key to doing a good podcast. No matter how big the audience is, if you're passionate about your subject, you'll be fun to listen to. Conversely, if you're not passionate about it, every cast would become a burden to do, and if you start dreading doing it, your audience will be able to tell. Good luck, and let me know if she does start one. I've been thinking about how we can better spread the word about podcasting so more people can enjoy it. One thing I've noticed is that right away when I bring it up to people, they somehow feel like they're behind the times because they don't already know about it. Either they haven't heard of it and they think you're a lunatic, or they have and they feel stupid because they haven't figured out what it is yet. I try to reassure them immediately that the whole technology is so new that they're actually way up front if they've even heard of podcasting. Now that I've got them feeling better about themselves, I ask them what they're interested in, what their hobbies are. The chances are their hobbies are not what my hobbies are, that not everybody loves talking about geek stuff. Well, I know we all do, but not everybody else does. So you need to find out what they care about. The good thing about podcasts is there's a podcast on virtually every single topic. Another good thing to find out next is how their world runs. What do they have a long commute? Do they like to do outdoor activities like gardening? Do they spend time in front of the computer? The purpose of this line of questioning is so you can tailor your description of how it works to how they might want to listen. If somebody tells you they live 5 minutes from work, you're not going to tell them how great it is to listen to in the car, right? Now you have the tools to fit them out with a podcast or two that might meet their needs. I did this with Harvey and Melissa over the weekend, and while I found tons of gardening podcasts for Melissa, I would like some suggestions of ideas for good podcasts on cars. Harvey likes Click and Clack, but they do their podcast for money through audible.com, unfortunately. If anyone has a recommendation, send it on my way so we can get Harvey into listening to podcasts. Debbie T. wrote in about the collection of Google's fun logo images I had posted. She pointed out that Google actually has their own logo museum, too. Well, I guess that's kind of obvious that they would have one. But anyway, I'm sure it's not as good as mine. But it's available at google.com/holidaylogos.html. Debbie also reiterated listener Frank's comments about the inaccessibility of iWeb. She pointed out that many people don't even dumb down their photos before posting them with iWeb. I think most people assumed iWeb would do that for you. Even the open source JAlbum from jalbum.net dumbs your photos down. It asks you how you want them shrunk to make it whatever resolution you'd like. By the way, Debbie does CSS and XHTML tutorials that she posts on the web at debbietdesigns.com. She's been teaching online since 2000, but took a break from it for about a year and found she missed it. So she started to do her own school so she could get back to teaching web design again. She plans on offering several levels of workshop for coding, design, and maybe even WordPress. The tutorials start with basic XHTML and then move on to a little bit of beginner CSS. I'm planning on heading over to Debbie's tutorial soon. I sure wish I could sure use some beginner's level learning tools. Thanks for the tips, Debbie. Well, it's time for a heat update on the MacBook Pro. So last weekend, my MacBook Pro started running really hot. Now, it's been hot all along, as you know, but now it got so hot that I couldn't even put my palm down on the wrist rest on the left-hand side, so I was barely able to use it. I did my trick of setting it on top of my PowerBook as a heat sink. I used the bottom-to-bottom so I wouldn't hurt the monitor on the PowerBook, and then I set it on my lap, and even after a while, that was unbearable. This went on from Sunday afternoon through Monday night. A couple of people pointed me to a site called RagingMenace.com where this guy took his MacBook Pro apart and found a lot of excessive thermal grease on many of the components. I'm not really clear why excess thermal grease would increase the heat unless it was somehow interfering with the temperature sensor or something, which would cause the fans not to go on. I was reading all of the postings on his message boards, and I found a guy who was running a cool tool called Menu Meters from, I'm not sure. I don't have the link handy. I'll have to put it in the show notes. Anyway, this little freeware utility shows a bunch of statistics in the menu bar. Remember how I like statistics? One of them is a pair of graphs showing how much CPU power is being used on each of the processors. I thought this looked like fun, so I installed it. And it showed that both processors were running at 100%. For like 10 minutes, 100%, hammering away. So I'm sitting there trying to think why it would be using both processors 100%. And I clicked on the graph, and they had an option to open up the utility Activity Monitor. So I popped that thing up. Activity Monitor, by the way, is kind of like Task Manager on Windows, where you can see what tasks are running, but it shows you what percentage they're using. So I take a look at Activity Monitor, and lo and behold, it showed that two runaway Skype sessions were open, and they were both taking up all of the processor resources that nobody else was using. So it was like 95%. I didn't even have Skype open. I hadn't used Skype since Sunday morning either. I killed both processes, and suddenly it dropped down to about 6-8% on each processor. That was pretty scary. But I'm glad there was a root cause, at least. I've been watching them pretty carefully ever since then, and I haven't found any runaway processes, but I can make them crank up if I want to. So I'm keeping an eye on those in case this happens again. One cool thing happened when I launched Windows under Parallels, and I started up a big PowerPoint file under Windows. I kept an eye on the Activity Monitor, and I was able to get Parallels to take up more than 100% of the processor. I thought that was cool because it showed that Parallels might be actually multi-threaded, meaning it's spreading its processing requirements across both processors, not just using one. That would explain why Windows runs so quickly on the MacBook Pro. If any of you have to connect into your work network from home from time to time, you're probably familiar with the term virtual private network, or VPN. This is a technology that allows you to enter your work network from the wide open internet, and yet get inside the firewall of your company and not cause any insecurities to that work network. You have to get the VPN software from your company that includes some files that tells the software how to find the VPN servers and are tailored to the type of network equipment your company uses. The reason I bring this all up is because VPNing on a machine with two operating systems running, like I am, can do some interesting things. I realized that I can go into the VPN under OS X, but the Windows operating system will remain on the outside internet. I also tested the opposite, going into the VPN on the Windows side, and OS X stayed outside the firewall. Isn't that cool? I'm not sure if it's useful for any purpose, but I thought it was an interesting effect. Research Department Niraj sent me an interesting article over on iPodNN.com about how some miners were trapped in a Tasmanian mine for over a week, and for some reason, while they couldn't rescue them any quicker, they were able to send some iPods down to them to relieve the boredom. I had to wonder whether they put any podcasts on there. That would have been cool. Adam Christensen of the MacCast reported on this podcast, and I thought he made a really insightful comment. Everybody's been mailing this article around about the miners with the iPods, but he said, isn't there a bigger story in here? There were miners stuck in a mine for over a week? Why didn't we hear about that? That's a big story. Sure hope they got out of there safely. So the MacBook Pro has two-fingered scrolling built in. It has an extra wide trackpad. And that allows you to use your two fingers together to scroll up and down in all kinds of documents, and you can actually scroll side to side. A while ago, I talked about the hack for older PowerBooks and iBooks using iScroll 2, which allows you to do two-fingered scrolling as well. My question is, does anyone know if you can do that under Windows? My husband Steve has gotten addicted to two-fingered scrolling on his PowerBook, but it drives him nuts that he can't do it on his work laptop that's a Windows machine. I'm hoping someone out there knows a hack for Windows XP that will do this. How about it, guys? There's an interesting shootout over at reviews.cnet.com where they pitted an Acer TravelMate against a MacBook Pro. Both machines were running Core Duo Intel processors, so this was the first time a true apples-to-apples comparison could be made. Pun intended. They did a good job of balancing the different requirements and what should be measured and how. They did some of the tests under Windows on both sides, and in some cases let the MacBook Pro run Mac OS X. I don't want to tell you who won. That would take all the fun out of it, but you might want to go check it out. There's a link in the show notes. My buddy Ron sent me a link to where you can now get podcasts of classes over at Berkeley, at UC Berkeley. I think this is a really cool use of technology. These guys aren't the first to do it. Stanford and Wellesley College do it as well. I can imagine how cool this would be if I was in college. If I missed a class, I could just make it up. Or if I wanted to get a refresher of the material for a final exam preparation, or if I just wanted to learn something new and I didn't even actually want to enroll in the college, I could learn on my own time. I know some folks are all a-Twitter about this, worried that, students won't go to class real-time anymore, and that's going to be bad. But maybe that's just the evolution of our new way of learning. Maybe we shouldn't try to change, stop technology just because we don't understand how it's going to work when we get there. I think we should just let it go and let it see what it can be. I've really enjoyed listening to getting to hear John C. Dvorak over on the Twit podcast, mostly to hear his style of speaking when he makes his outrageous accusations, insults, and predictions. A while back, people were all up in arms because he predicted that Apple would abandon their operating system. I can't believe I can't help but believe a major driver in this was his desire to just rile people up and make controversy. I can't believe how many podcasts I tuned into where everybody was just, this isn't true, what is he, he's a nutcase, they get all upset. Well, he got a lot of traffic to his site now, didn't he? If this wasn't his objective, he sure achieved it anyway. My buddy Ron sent me a link to an article by Dvorak on MarketWatch.com where he gives his commentary. And on that, he gave his commentary on the 8 signs that the software giant Microsoft is dead in the water. He made a couple of interesting points. He pointed out that Apple is running these new ads completely poking fun of Windows now. And ironically, Microsoft is using dinosaurs in their ads. Now, that's pretty bad if you think about it. What brainiac came up with that ad campaign? He also says it's odd that Microsoft looks at any company that is successful as being bad and must be a competitor, even if they don't compete in the same space. If you think about it, they're chasing after Google when they don't even make the same products. Well, I suppose they have MS on search, but that's not like a real search anyway, so it's not really a competition. Anyway, check out the article. There's a link in the show notes, and let me know what you think. Well, that's going to wrap it up for a short episode of the NoscillaCast. I'm really amazed I got this done at all with the crazy week I've had. Thanks for all the great feedback. Keep it coming. You can drop me a line at allison@podfeet.com or drop a comment over on the show notes. As always, all the links are in the show notes, so stop on by. Thanks for listening and stay subscribed.